සාදු සාදු සාදු
නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස තංකින් මඤ්ඤසි මාගන්ධිය අපිනු තේ දිත්තෝ ආසුතෝ ආ රාජාවා රාජ මහාමත්තෝ ආ පංචයි කාම ගුනේ සමප්පිතෝ සමංගී භූතෝ පරිචරයමානෝ කාම තණ්ණං අපහාය කාම පරිලාහං අපපටි විනෝදෙත්වා විගත පිපාසෝ අජ්ජත්තං වූපසන්න චිත්තෝ විහාසිවා විහෙරතිවා විහෙරිසතිවා විහෙරිසතිවාති නොහිතං භෝගෝතමාති ති Dear venerable Dhamma friends, I like reciting this kind of Pali phrase. Sometimes it is fairly long, sometimes it is just a quotation. That is to respect the Pali Sutta, and along the series of Dhamma talk, we are now gradually come up to the middle or little beyond the middle part of the discourse. So to start the talk, I will just give a summary from the meditator's point of view. The dialogue between the Magandhya and the Buddha is the crux. But it is started with Magandhya and Bharadwaja. Bharadwaja is the host, Magandhya is a visitor. And before that incident, a visitor came to the Bharadwaja, that is the Buddha, the Gautama. And seeing his arrangement of the seats and others, Magandhya asked, "Who is your visitor?" Appear like a recluse. Then the Bharadwaja is telling, "Yes, Master Gautama is with us, and he just went for alms rounds." Then Magandhya's immediate react was, "Bunau samano Gautama. Oh, he is the one who is the destroyer of the growth. I am telling it because that is the way it is being interpreted in our text." Then the Bharadwaja, in a very diplomatic way, he says, "Don't tell it like that, because he is a well-respected person and he is an enlightened person. So therefore, it is better not to call him like that." Then he said, no problem. Even in the front of him, I can tell him if happen to get a chance, please let him know." The Magandhya told like that. And while talking, luckily, it is our luck, the Buddha himself come to the place. And then Magandhya is directly telling. Earlier he is asking the Bharadwaja to please let him know if you get a chance. But now he is directly telling, "Bunahu Samano Gautama." Or Samana Gautama, the Master Gautama, is a destroyer of growth, or against the productivity, against the creativity, like. And I am telling you, sir, because it was the case written in our script. Then the Buddha says, "If I understand what your complaint is, of course I am restraining. I am restrain the eye, the visual objects, and the all the other consequences of seeing. And therefore, I call myself as a restraint of my eye faculty, ear faculty, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. Is that the case that you are telling that I am a destroyer of growth?" "Yes, yes. That is what I am telling you. This world is to entertain. I used to see, that is my part, I am interpreting, I used to see different colors and the shapes, and the world is for the development. People are trying and doing jobs and everything to increase it. But you are doing as well as prescribing to restrain the eye faculty, ear faculty, nose, tongue, body and the mind. So that is the case. Then the direct convocation, communication happened. And then the Buddha says that imagine a person having so much of already earned visual objects, the sounds, the smell, taste, and touch, and the mind objects, he some or the other renounce and go and live under a tree or in a solitude place and in the forest, and he's with the help of this restraint, one day he managed to see the inner peace. He managed to see the peace-abiding mind or concentrated mind or mindful mind. And there he feel kind of a contentment. He feel kind of a satisfaction. He feel kind of a inner peace. What about that? Then earlier he mentioned about the restraint of faculty as a destroyer of growth. But now he says, I have nothing to say. Because that kind of renunciation and going for the samatha or concentration or peace achievement or endowment is well recognized and well written in the Brahmana scriptures. Later, they changed the name into Hinduism. Before the Buddhism, it was Brahmanism. And Brahman, they have written. So therefore, he can't deny. He says, no, when Master Gautama had nothing to say. Then the Buddha says, I was such a person. I had princely facilities and everything. But I felt better to renounce everything. And I went to the forest and I found my own way. Of course, Buddha himself underwent Alaraka Lama and Uddaka Ramaputra. They are Brahman tradition. And they knew how to go and abide, not only in the Rupa Jhana or in the materialistic kind of a jhanic experience, even the fine material, a Rupa Jhanic level. So therefore, he was well-versed about that. And then he says, the Buddha says, what you are telling, I have practiced. No, I am born with this principle facilities, amenities and facilities, and I renounce. That is not our tradition. I am going against that. I came here and I am abiding by peace. And imagine a person is even without earning that kind of a samatha gaining and samatha results, if he's doing good things and with the restraint of moral restraint and restraint of faculties and be aware of the moral shame and the moral fear, if he's going to reborn in the heavenly sphere, he will be engulfed with the heavenly visual things, sounds, smell, taste, touch, and the mind objects. They have nothing to pay for. They are earned by endowment of this present in this earthen life. And when he goes there, he can see what is happening in the human realm. How much the people are enduring, tiring and earning, and with that earning tax and rentals and robbers and all the diseases, corona, social the distance, all bloody things. And then will that God will appreciate telling that the human realm is very good because they have earned themselves and pay taxes and kind of thing, better I go there and abide in the human world, having this heavenly pleasure? Never. They never think. They never come here and abide by the sensual pleasure. Or he said that if a person with lot of rash, it's a bleeding and soaring one, And he used to go near the fireplace and burn, heat them and scratching. And each time it is scratching, it is oozing. And under such circumstances, he prefer fireplaces. He prefer scratching. But imagine once he got cured and the scars and everything gone, will he again go and live close by, close to a fireplace? Or will overnight scratching and... No. So likewise, the lowly pleasure is being replaced by a higher kind of, a better kind of pleasure, is called materialistic pleasure, is being replaced by immaterial pleasure. If you do not know the comparison between, if you know only the worldly pleasure, if you know only the sensual pleasure, and restrain appear like a self-imprisonment. You feel like an inmate in the open prison camp. You are imposing your own restraint, not to look at things, not to hear, it appears like a mad. But I try to show, I try to compare it with, even though you are living in the household life, you are living in the sensuous world, and if you introduce mindfulness, if you introduce kind of a restraint of your faculties, and there you can understand what you have seen, what you are observing present moment, and you are wish to see, will be completely make you wondered, fantasizing, daydreaming, and hardly you can keep the mindfulness. They appear like hindrances. That is, in the technical jargon or in the Buddhist way, it is, you would have temporarily given up your household life. Imagine about the inmates in the residential retreat in Chanagrove. They are temporary for a few days, given up to all the household life and their movable and immovable assets, and come to the Chanagrove. And when you go and prepare your cushion and you sit, and your main aim is to be mindful in the present moment, see how many visual objects happens, how many inner chatter happening, how much you are taken for a ride by a little smell or a taste or bodily uncomfort or bodily comfortability or mind objects, and endless without end ever complaining, I can't meditate because of visual objects or normal objects. I can't meditate because of sounds, inner chatter or outer chatter, or this smell, taste, touch, and the mental objects. So your complete meditation report is full of distraction, bewilderment, and fantasizing, daydreaming. And because you have an object, you have an aim, that's to keep the mind in the present moment. So not that karma guna, that not that direct materialistic pleasure disturbing you. You have physically gone away. You got the physical solitude, but you see the perception of materialistic pleasure appear like visual objects, visual sounds, memory of the smell, taste, touches, and the visual, mental objects. So all appear like a distraction. So therefore you are asking, you are pleading, how I can do away with the visual object? How can I do away with the inner chatter? How can I do away with the smells and the taste while happening in sitting meditation? Or uncomfortable situation in the cushion, even in the walking. And the mind that daydreaming, fantasizing, past and the future. So when such a thing happen, you can answer, you can compare the Magandhi and the Buddha. Because as far as you have a vow, you have a determination to be mindful, to be simply here and now. But then you can understand how much your senses organs are unruly. They have no agenda, pulling you from the all the sides, just like 7 wild beasts. Whenever the chance happens, eye is pulling to that side. It don't care about the ear, nose, tongue, body, smell, and the mind object. And all has to suffer because apical dominance is there. And whenever the ear and the sound going to take for a ride, you don't have any sense about seeing, smelling, tasting, touching. They are all become slaves. So no one knows as far as you are in the household, as far as you are in a carnival, as far as you are in a supermarket, as far as you are in a trip. But when you come here, you understand they are maybe a memory, maybe a future fantasizing and future planning, and how much they are hacking you, destroying you. And therefore, the Buddha is giving examples, and still, if you can imagine, if you can experience, if you can remember a one thought moment of mindfulness, it's a clear-cut indication you are completely conquered sensuous pleasure. And you are not, it is being replaced by the sensuous perception. That perception also now replaced by a thought moment of mindfulness. What a kind of an achievement. Upanditasada used to say, you have cut off all the moha patala, all the ignorance and all the taints you have brought forward from your past life, if you are believing it, or your memory, for a split second, you are here and now. But I, for 40 years, I am looking here and there. Even if you get a thought moment of mindfulness, no one appreciating it. Because they don't have deductive knowledge. Because they don't have inferential knowledge. They don't know the danger of the materialistic pressure, sensuous pleasure. And its perception. That is called obsessional defilements. That is called 5 nivaranas. That is called mind-made distractions. They are just thoughts. But when you are sitting, you see how much they are coming and torturing when compared to the one single thought moment of mindfulness. And therefore, it is a duty for the mindfulness facilitator to teach the beginners, not only you must be mindful, you must know how to praise it, how to appreciate it, how to verify it. When you are talking, if you are telling, I am mindful, it won't work, it won't do. You have to tell, because I knew my attention was at the right nostril or left nostril, I felt the gushing air going inside, gushing air going outside. Therefore, I am mindful. So then and there you are verifying. That is the point we make our meditation scientific. And that verification can lead you to ask simple question, how many that kind of breaths you can continue? In-breath to out-breath difference is this, and first in-breath to second in-breath, third in-breath, like this is the sharpest point in making mindfulness developed. That's still the quantitative development of the mindfulness. When you keep on practicing like that, you may get a challenge or opening or invitation. What about the qualitative difference of the in-breath to out-breath? It is not so difficult. But if I ask you, what is the difference between the left leg touch and the right leg? I know it is a difficult question, because there's hardly any difference. But if I am going to ask you, what is the difference between the first in-breath and the second in-breath? You become just like Magandhya, I have nothing to say. But the advanced yogis, they know chronologically the breath is evolving, either becoming gross or subtle, liking or disliking, becoming closer or far away, becoming feel in or out, or sometimes you feel just appearing in breath, just disappearing in breath, or the middle of the in-breath. Likewise, there are many, many facets of the in-breath and out-breath, and when you are observing it, you are utterly far and far away from the sensuous pleasure or homely and household pleasure. And no any nivaranas distraction. So therefore, everyone appreciate it's a great achievement. But people, those who do not have theoretical understand and the inferential understand, they can't comprehend it by reading books and getting PhDs and diplomas. But instead, when you are practicing and getting that difficulty or the crux of the situation, the communication gap is you don't know how to express it. Whatever you experience, you express through your rotten past memory. You don't know how to appreciate momentary or accelerated amount of mindfulness when it penetrates into the object, how it appears, because it's a completely new thing. So, the Upandita Sayado from Burma, that's a genius person. That was his mastery. He says, don't say that I am mindful, I was mindful for a few minutes. Express it. How do you know chronologically the mindfulness is intact? Mindfulness is steadfast. When the mindfulness is steadfast, object is no more object. Object is ever changing. So yogis may report, I observed in-breath and out-breath for 5 seconds or 5 minutes or kind of thing, and this is the in-breath and this is out-breath. Definitely that is a superficial face value kind of reporting. But then the teacher will advise, okay, that very good that you keep the object in view with, focused with, and would you mind to observe the changes of the object or evolution of the object or the metamorphosis of the object? So this is the point samatha and vipassana is getting deviated. Samatha object is just like a fresco painted on the wall, and you can observe. It is there, you are also there, so you can come closer and all the kind of thing. But vipassana way, the very object helped you to establish mindfulness, you look at it in a critical way. When it is critically observing means moment to moment observation, it is called thin slicing of time. And then you can see it is having a drama, it is having episodes, it is having a kind of a message, but our eye is utterly unhappy with its presentation because of our permanent notion. So permanent notion is the what the Magandhi is telling, you are destroying the progress. All the worldly pleasure, technology and all the kind of thing, based upon permanent notion. Whenever impermanence happens, see what happens after the corona. All the properties we earn, all the health care and everything is completely challenged. And we have to think alternatives. We never thought that the health sector will get such a damaging, such a threatening one. And our properties, how much going to give a rescue under these conditions? It's a single example. So the changes and what is happening as and when you are observing the object is hardly. Imagine you have a girlfriend and you are observing the girlfriend, how she become old age. You cannot. Then you can't love. Of course, girlfriend will not be happy. And the boyfriend also the same. So that is why the world is telling that you have this kind of soaps and this kind of cosmetics and everything. The mother is like the daughter and daughter is like the mother, and you see the skin color and we can make permanent. You have to pay so much so. I can adjust your shape and the body and the appearance by so much of money. when I'm traveling, I see the airline magazines. Shameless. They are telling if you have lacking, these parts are not grown. Oh, it is simple. You have to pay so much of thousands. And you can have a complete, the Victorian style, King's Leo, Prince Leo, Queen's Leo appearance. Now, fashion is this. You must have shanky legs and the thin vest. And this is how must be the rest. And you are ready. They are utterly following Magandhya. That's the point I used to say that present second generation. I mean, once we prepare, open the floodgates, it is happening like that. So we discussed so far, so much, so good. We discussed and now today I am going to give another example. I mean, highlighting and reiterating the same. The Buddha is asking Magandhya. Now it's Magandhya is slowly, slowly withdrawing. Buddha is asking, imagine a king or minister or kingly fellow is full of sensuous pleasure. And he is completely enjoying it, endowed with it, and happy with it. So whenever such a situation happens, have you ever seen such a person is abiding by inner peace, mind is inward, and he is free of desire and thirst and the fever for the sensuous and the sexual pleasure? Then the Magandhya says no. Then the Magandhya says no. So that is why the Buddha to be born in a princely family, therefore no one can say Buddha is imagining it. Buddha is fantasizing it. No, he was a prince. And we are not. Imagine when we are believing the Buddha, as he says, though I came from the lower middle class family, and I thought when I become educated and all the kind of thing, this is the motto must be, this must be the ideal way of life, the what is we see in advertisements, what we see in the media. I never thought they are unhappy. I never thought they are with the frustration, they are with the tension. And after meditation, after 20, 30 years only I knew this so-called elite group, they are the highest tension, frustration. And they are living in such a way, their external exposure is driven by someone's agenda. But they are not happy. So whenever it happened to meet and talk with them, if I am a monk or if I am meditating, they are thinking I am completely born as a monk and I am a complete religious person. So therefore they say we can't talk because we are not even thinking about becoming a monk. No meditation, so therefore no communication. Then I have to tell them, no, I have lived as a layperson 36 years. So at that time, that your way of life is my aim. But when you are sharing this, I am sorry to say, the family affairs and their mental health and their expectations. And I feel so sorry because that is what I thought the ideal life. So they can't think about even the inner peace. They can't think about even for a split second of mindfulness. One thing is they don't know. Simply theoretical understanding. Second thing is, they never comprehend, they can deduce, they can have an inferential knowledge. It is such a contentment, it is such a satisfaction by doing nothing. No eye, no visual objects. It's good. No ear consciousness, no sounds. We call noble silence. And we go to the normal atmosphere, no special good or bad smell. Our tongue knows only the saliva. No any other thing. eating, chewing. And not only that, it is not talking also. And we are sitting in a simple cushion. And sometimes you don't know whether you are sitting or walking, your body also feel just on air. Simply say, you can't see the margin or boundary of your body. There's something called body, but you can't pinpoint it. And the mind, few split second, you know it is here and now. So such a thing, they can't, the so-called these politically, socially and economically high people, they can't think about. So I think in America, when the mindfulness is growing, they say, it is a white man job. It is not given to the other Americans. So some or the other, you make a distance. No, it is none of my business. And when you become princely, kingsly, it's more distance to the inner peace, more distance to the present moment. That point is very clearly made here, and it is being very clearly appreciated by Magandhya. And Buddha says, Magandhya, you are correct. In my life also, I have never seen such a princely, kingsly people full of bragging about their sensuous pleasure, engulfed and endowed with, they can't think about inner peace. They can't think about abiding by peace, introvert. So we are not princely, but if you are believing what the Buddha is telling, what the Magandhya, the rivalry also telling, we have to have some kind of a understanding about how to say enough, how to say no to this luxurious life, to this consumerization. But it appears like very unsocial. You have to keep on accumulating whatever may be the frustration and the tension and the divorces and the committing suicide and the destroying others' progress. It doesn't matter. So what under such circumstances can we expect any kind of a moral shame or a moral fear in their generation? Cannot be. So that is the point where we have to understand what the Buddha says is always we have to do and practice and believe it. But with the deductive knowledge, with the inferential knowledge, you can understand. So you have to understand the basic needs. You have to understand the luxuries. And we have to move within that to margins, not to go for self-indulgence or sexual or sensual indulgence or self-mortification. And I am a monk, so this point is being badly interpreted among the monks, or rather I would say among the forest monks. They are utterly, the Asiatic monks, they are in a self-mortification. Do you think it is the meritorious deed to the give the torturing and all the kind of postures and feeding habits? I mean, we can't find fault with, because the Buddha-to-be had that experience for 6 years. Mortification. And he thought it is the meritorious deed, it's a spirituality. And present-day mendicants, or present-day the monks, I have no discrimination about the nuns, also in the same boat. They are torturing. In that sense, I am living in such a moderate luxury life, I understand. And the best example I found is Upandita Sayadu. He says, when you are practicing, when you are to see the object, how it is evolving, while it is in view with mindfulness, you must have your body support. That's called the body knowledge or body. If it is suffering, I mean, diseases we can't do away with, but if you are torturing and inflicting suffering, so that is also one kind of a nihilistic. If the Magandhya is telling that is wrong, Buddha also will say yes. But you must have the healthy mind. You must have the healthy body. So you must know the basic needs. So it is not a joke. The how to, how much you must eat is the subject of the Buddha. Not a single person can conclude that I am exactly know what to eat and kind of thing. Yeah, it's a lifelong experiment. Everything. So therefore, when we are practicing in a meditation retreat, the organizer, retreat center designer decides a certain amount of moderate food, a moderate attire or clothings, and moderate beddings, and moderate sittings, and certain amount of medicine. Not to go for this, the alcohol and all the kind of drugs. Besides that, whenever people wanted to have inner peace, they go for alcohol, they go for all the other indulgence, dangerous drugs, and all the habits. So they are fast growing, specifically in the developed countries. And I think that opium is now slowly allowed. I don't know exactly what is the chemical way of how the opium is working, because Ayurveda also, they accept it. So likewise, they are finding ways and means to answer in society at large. But the Buddha's answer is, here, now I am. I don't believe any kind of a civilized answer for these world questions. No, in plural terms. But when you are isolated and when you are minding your own business, when you are mindful, no one can stop you. I mean, no one can disprove it. Even Magandhya is not disproving it. So that is what the Buddha says. Even you going to the higher rank in the economic status and the elite group and the political powers and the social powers, that will never assure the inner peace. But during the time of the Buddha, King Bimbisara was already Sotapanna. And Buddha, the king who became the ruler of the Kapilavastu, where the Buddha left, Mahanama is Sakadagami. And the Bimbisara, King Bimbisara is known as the ideal Buddhist monk. So they have all the sensuous pleasure, but they are not abiding by it, they are not indulging it, they are not endowed by it, they know how to restrain, and it's very difficult than the medium class people. Because the world is expecting them to get engulfed in all the sensuous pleasure. And I would say the parents are happy with their children if they are having so much of all the amenities, thinking that they will understand the extremes. Never. Even the parents do not know. Even the teachers do not know. Even the doctors do not know. Even the lawyers do not know. Even the rulers do not know. But that is not the way. They are talking about the socialization. They are talking about the civilization. They are talking about the popular, the plural terms. But the way of the Buddha's teaching, of course, we are sitting in a group. We are interviewed in a group sitting. But we are talking about something here, now I am. So therefore, this inner peace or this kind of introvert kind of thing happening only in this dimension. Here, now I am. So whenever the group, all the meditators are assuring the silence of the others, solitude of the others, we can live in the same room. Still we call sunyagar. Because our aim, because our preparedness is not to indulge the facilities. So when I was in Burma, we designed the forest hermitage, and when I go to the, after 5 years or so, it has fairly developed, and the Sri Lankan ambassador paid a visit to me. And I was happy to show him this is the dining hall, and these are the dwelling places, and this is the meditation hall, and he was not happy. And he came and asked, Bhante, do we need so much of luxuries for meditation? Then I told, what do you mean? You see that everything is the modern and all. Then there was the translator, she came from Michigan in America. I told, you better talk with that girl, and she's responsible about this kind of thing. And he came that, do we need this kind of amenities and facilities for the yogis? And she told, of course, the Americans are not happy here because they don't have enough facilities. So therefore, we have gone to the maximum we can give, but funded by Americans, they are not happy. They want to have more facilities. So this is the way we think about the amenities and facilities and what you are planning and what must be the atmosphere in the meditation center. So I asked him that, our ambassador, did you get the answer? He is not happy. You see, when you are meditating, you must suffer. When you are meditating, it means the torturing. And that is what happens when you are meditating, when the mind is wandering, you torture yourself. You think, what a crime, my mind is wandering. And I am not in the in-breath and out-breath, it is going to the thought, it is going to the pain, it is going to the sounds and blah, 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 blah. But if you are, of course, if you are aiming at concentration, that is true. But if you are only aware of the mindfulness, if you know that my mind is not with the in-breath, but with the thought, not with the sound, not with the pain, what a sharpness. What a kind of sharpness. Being in the thought itself, if you have that kind of sharpness, you can just inferentially or deductive way can see, while I am thinking in sitting, have I stopped my breathing? Can I comprehend and see whether I am my sitting posture? No problem. No problem. Because you know you are not mindful, you are not in the primary object, but being in that secondary object, displaced by the mind, your primary object, still you can deduce. So there you are not torturing. Main thing is not to worry. Main thing is not to worry. If you are worrying, even the Buddha cannot help. But these facts, these small points, only palatable, only communicable when you are in a continuous meditation, when you are professionally meditation, so to say, you are full-time meditator, you can understand how much we are blaming our mind, thinking unmindful, which is not done by you, it is something happened. It is not your mind, it is a human mind. It's conditioned by so much of Buddhist says it is a past life. And other people says your childhood situations. And the attribution to the food, attribution to the climate, and your mental state. So when the mind is such in bewilderment, if you are going to worry, I feel so sorry. I try my best. Please report as it is. Don't go into say, don't worry about the wandering mind. And the wandering mind is a very good opening to the Nibbana. Whenever mind is met up with the impediment, whenever mind is met up with such a difficulty, so posture junction, so observe the object junction or other junctions, they are very close to Nibbana. Provided if you are not worrying. That means you are reporting it as if someone else, as if a video camera is reporting all your actions like. So that is the way you get rid of this unwanted torturing. It is not only by physical torturing, by difficult postures and fasting and all the kind of thing. But internally, still you carry this inner torturing. So you have to, when you are reporting, the real meditation masters, they can understand, they can say, hey darling, please, main thing is not to worry. Just know, you are not in the breath, but you know exactly you are in the thought, not in a sound, not in a pain. That very sharpness is a better mindfulness, or it is called power of mindfulness. So Venerable Sariputta says, Pamadena kampatiti sati bala. Whenever you are lapse, whenever you are mindful, if you are not worrying, that is what you call power of mindfulness. That is about to go to the mindfulness as the enlightenment factor, bojjhanga. So these parts only you can do when your body and the mind is supporting it. So therefore, if you are in the self-torturing or overindulgence of the sensuous pleasure, there cannot be any nibbana or possibility. Each and every difficulty is a beacon light for the nibbana. So we call be on the ball, riding the wave. And this is very adventurous. It is very hobby-like thing. And we can completely share with other yogis and many traditional people, or rather I would say many samatha people will not appreciate it. But lucky enough, for the last 20 years or 10 years, these things have been now slowly come into books, come into the discussion, come into the interviews, and people try to report it. Not only the meditation sphere, all the others, that's called risk lovers. But I don't think any other places so juicy, so sappy than in insight meditation. So when such a thing happened, I recently started accumulating all the testimonies, how much yogis can understand when the mind is with primary object, you know, verifiably, you are mindful on the primary object. And second option is, while you are in the primary object, you can feel peripheral sounds and the pain and thoughts. And you know it is secured, even though threats are there. And that's the second thing. And the third thing is, completely mind is gone. It is in the secondary object or distraction. And you know you are not mindful in the primary object. It's called gochara ajyatta bhumi. That is your father's periphery and internal, that is object. But it is not. You are now distracted, so to say. But you know verily you are distracted by a sound or thought or pain or maybe other thing. And when that happens, you are looking at the earth from the moon's point of view, looking at the earth from the satellite point of view. You know you are not in. So not to worry at that level, how much training you must have. And being that, imagine you can look at your sitting body, you can look at the automatic breathing, how it happens. To breathe to happen, self is not necessary. For the sitting posture to maintain, the self is not necessary. And furtherance, when you are walking, sometimes you may hear a beautiful song and you can see you are entertaining it. But you never come to the meditation walking path to entertain music, but it came. And then you know, what a fool am I? I am listening. And still, walking happens. It never stops. And to that walking to happen, self is not necessary. And you can see it is robot-like, going to the other end, coming back, just like a pendulum. Exactly the natural walking happens. Because mind is outstation, and from there you can look at how I am walking in the sense unmindful way, absent-minded way, but the walking happens exactly the natural way. And further as the highest position, still that walking is becoming automatic or uneffortful, calming down, the inner peace, the introvertness. And the even you are listening, even you are thinking or in a pain, you can see breath is coming down. Just like a mind jar. So when that happens, you can say meditation is one thing, what you call happening automatically. Your mind is always to worry. And that worries are much, much better in the kingsly and princely families. Much, much better, much, much higher in the so-called higher grades. Because they think that is the product, that is the growth, that's the merit that I get, that is my abilities like. But in the middle class people, you just imagine, not very poor people, they can understand, I can't go to that high kind of princely level, but I have basic needs and little bit above. And now, on top of that, when I go to the peaceful mind, with the mindful mind, he can understand the giving up of that middle class amenities is not challengeful than giving up a princely amenities. So therefore, we middle class people are better off. So, some people think that we are interpreting so because we cannot go to the higher class, we cannot be elite group. Maybe. But in Magandhya Sutta, that point is not been raised. So therefore, the Buddha says, even if you are in a highly appreciated top class people, and if you are ever not satisfied with the sexual and sensual pleasure, insatiable, it is a fever. It's a thirst. So that fever and thirst, dharata parilaha, never allow introvert journey. Never allow there's a peace inside. So I don't know how much I am technical and how much it is relevant, these points to mention in the Dhamma talk. I read Mary Magdalene Gospel. Because I don't know whether it's a fabrication or whatever, maybe, but book is available. And she says, the peace is inside. Not the omnipotent, omnipresent God outside. So these kind of a very radical, the expressions are there. So the elite group and utterly deprived group, they can't think about. They hate. They have always then dharata parilaha. They are in utter thirst. They are in utter fever. But in the middle class, people have sometimes ups and sometimes downs, sometimes gains and sometimes loss. So inferentially understand the peace of mind, which I gain from a temporary renunciation from the household life or permanent renunciation and going to a solitude place. They don't have that much of a fear to be solitude. But the rich people, they have their own fear. They must have their private security. They must have a pistol. They must have weapons. So when the Buddha is confronting with the Nalagiri, the drunkard elephant, the Buddha showed the empty hand. He never showed just like a James Bond, the pistol or the cyanide or nothing. He said, you are also such a giant, I am also such a giant, the way you are going to happen is you will end up with the nether world. And all the alcoholic dope went off, kneeled down. So the Buddha's power is inner power, not weapons, not any martial arts, nothing. So they are the arts of the fearful people. And they have something to protect. But we, meditators, we know we have something, but it is not such a lost for us because we are gaining here and there a peace of mind. So therefore, I am not going to compare it with the jhanic absorption and living in 1 hour, 2 hours like. I am not going to compare it with the sotapanna level where you will never go to the nether world. But I am telling the momentary concentration, the momentary mindfulness, that is verifiable. That every one of the residential retreat would have experience, but how much we are appreciating it, how much we know it is the, it's a clear cut replacement of the sense pleasure, it's a clear cut replacement of the sense perception. Instead, my mind is with that particular object. If that point is made clear, very easy to say, when you observe in that particular object, what happens? What happens to the mind jar if you keep it silent? Settle down. Calm down. Become subtle and subtlest. So in interviews, we can hear some people report, yes, it go to the subtle point. But again the grossness happens. Again, when you keep on observing, that's called insight, calm down. Again, become gross. And when that happens, if you withdraw yourself and can see, the calm down situation can lead to gross and turbulence. Turbulence can lead to calm down. That is what does it mean by dependent origination, reciprocality or relativity. So when that happens, you are no more. Meditation happened, that time the cycles can happen within a sitting hour 10-20 times. And ultimately, having object and no object, no, not having object is not judged by the liking and disliking. It is not judged by this is my mistake or my gain. So you have to meditate up to the point where the having object or no object exactly the same. So that meditation must be there, theory understanding must be there, inferential knowledge and the deductive knowledge must be there, and you must go prepared. That is the way we are using this already earned concentration, already earned mindfulness, and already earned wisdom to go up to the point, the unshakability. Disclaimer. Because by that time, your boundary is gone. You are not delimited. The delimitation happens whenever things become permanent. Now changing. One or the other reciprocality. So the Buddha is leading up to that. I hope we will discuss in the next day in the Dhamma talk. And hope we have proceed. We have advanced from the talk by talk. And hope you can experience by your own effort and hopefully you can express it in your reports. For that you must have this kind of a adverted mind. You must have a prepared mind, and that is very, very crucial. But I am not conditioning your mind. Please, please, please don't condition your mind to see this and that. But it is leading the way in a sequential order. So interview reports will witness, and willing to see, willing to hear and wishing to hear. With that remark, I would like to sum up the day's talk. Thank you very much for listening.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.